I'm meeting with a number of the artists that are part of the Black Artist Union here in Toronto, and I will try to do my best to channel some of the thoughts and ideas and questions that Liz likes to pursue. Why don't we just start by, we'll just go around and everybody can introduce themselves.
Okay, my name is Timothy Hunter, one of the members of the Black Artist Union.
I'm Sydney, artist, a Black Artist Union.
Right. Yeah. Aaron Jones.
Destiny Grimm.
Okay. Are you all from Toronto? Did you all grow up in this area?
East End, so Scarborough. At a certain point in time, my mom and my dad split, so I spent time in Oshawa, Ontario.
How about you?
I was born in Jamaica, right. And then when I moved up here in Canada, we actually moved to Brampton,
right.
Brampton, Ontario, which it was just before it started to become like suburbial.
Right.
So it was like turning from farmland, suburban kind of like village, and then moved to Toronto like during high school. I would not Toronto, I would say like North York, East North York, and now I currently reside in the West End, West North York. So
I grew up in, well, I was born in Toronto. I grew up in Markham and Pickering, and I was between the two up until now, really.
And you're in the city now?
Yep.
I was born in Toronto. I lived in the States till I was...
Where about?
Florida. Then moved back for school when I was 18.
Right.
So, and I've been in Toronto since then.
Yeah. So you're all artists.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about the Black Artist Union in a bit, but I thought we could start by talking about how you all came to be artists. Did you study art, or is it something you've always done? So maybe we'll go the other way around.
I started making paintings in high school, and maybe when I was 16, I went to art school, I went to OCAD, and then started really making art, I would say, closer to a few years ago, when I really started my practice that I'm working in now, currently. Mm-hmm.
And what's the kind of the core of your practice?
Predominantly painting, a bit of sculpture,
right.
As well.
When I was younger, I probably didn't think I'd be an artist. I was more like logic based, very into this like building stuff and math and like foundational tools that a kid could play with, so like building blocks were like one of the most important things for me. But it seemed like throughout school I got more engaged in doing my own thing, and it seemed like I couldn't really do anything other than like go into art if I was mm-hmm. to be in school.
And that was something that happened around like high school age, or
yeah, like high school age.
Yeah.
Just only wanted to draw more, or like on everything,
yeah.
Opposed to just do like schoolwork. It just seemed like, not necessarily thinking about art, but thinking about like making marks on stuff and just changing things within my environment became more important to me.
How about you?
So being Jamaican, I don't think art was ever really like given to me as an option until I wanted it to be. When I lived in Jamaica, I was part of an art school called ASHE, and it was really big, but the violence in Jamaica was really, really, still it was really bad. So that was one of the main reasons why like I left with my mom. But art was still, like dance, theater was something that was still very much a part of my life. But then I really was interested in like drawing, like fashion illustration. So I thought fashion was gonna be like a route. And then my mom started working at TIFF,
and
I started to fall in love with movies.
Yeah.
And then I fell in love with like the texture of clothing more, and like the motion of films. So I guess that's when I kind of fell in love with art, was like during middle school and high school. And I think I decided I wanted to become an artist towards like the end of college, when I realized that, I don't know, I don't think fashion is an industry that is good for anyone's morality, really. So I felt like art was something that I could bridge, where I feel like my morality would still be intact at the end
right.
of the day. But who knows?
Yeah. We'll where did you go to college?
I went to George Brown.
In fashion?
Yeah, I went, yeah.
I've always made art, so as a child, like, I always drew. I was into cartoons a lot,
yeah.
So that was my initial inspiration. In high school, I was really good. I guess I like writing, so when I enrolled in university, I went to U of T in art history program in England. Again, even all through then, I was still making artworks, but I never really understood how it necessarily worked to develop a practice.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was to be like in an arts education or in the creative education or academia or something. But I'd say a certain point in time, I'll be frank, it was, making art was a little more fun to me. So after I graduated, I just kind of decided to take my practice a little more seriously and like kind of develop that. And then after also, you know, you reach this crossroads of not knowing if a career in like, say, arts education is viable. Like, can I even enter that space? Or maybe the art space is a little more easy for me to get into or develop. So around 2013, 2014, there are certain things that had happened that kind of pushed me more into my practice. So actually here, Q, they do micro grants for a lot of young artists in the city. And I think 2013 was my first grant from them. And it kind of gave me the confidence to keep developing my practice. And so, yeah, that's pretty much like the timeline up until now.
Question that Liz often will ask people is, who were your mentors? Was there somebody in your life, family or outside or whatever, that you kind of inspired you in being an artist, into becoming an artist? Or what were the role models?
So for me, thinking about that, like I'm looking for a role model, like currently. Deciding that, oh, I'm an artist, I feel like that was kind of on me. No one like really pushed me in that direction. I was kind of like pulling away from the directions I wanted to be, or that were being pushed on me.
I currently don't have, like, let's say, a mentor that I would meet with or, like, discuss things with or have built that relationship with. However, someone that just recently became part of my life, Ebony Patterson, she was really close friends with my stepfather. So just seeing her work has been really inspiring, and it's really the only, like, Black female I can really see that does, I work with textiles and, like, photography and film. So she's pretty inspiring to me. It's just like what she's doing, her narrative that she chooses to talk about too as well. Not only is it I guess like relative to the times, but I feel like something that has been very repressed for
Can you describe what some of those?
So she works with mainly Black men as her muse. Her current piece that she actually did, it was Black Men and Violence. Her studio is in Jamaica, which is also my home country, and she took pictures of Black men and Black boys too as well, in very like vibrant suits with like guns and like water guns. And then she got those images transferred through tapestry, so like a carpet, and then she will embellish it with like beads and different types of like gems and crystals. And I don't know if it's kind of like a statement of how society has a certain sense of glamour towards Black men in particular and violence, even though it's like that kind of propaganda. It's like, as a Black man, you're so strong with like a gun or like this violent weapon, but really it's, I think it might even turn into a symbol of how it's a genocide towards the Black community too as well. That's why she's so inspiring.
My grandmother, she owned a shop in Jamaica before she came here. My grandfather, same thing. So they're very, I guess, on my mother's side especially, is this entrepreneurial kind of spirit that everyone has. Even though like when they came here, it's hard to maintain that in a lot of ways. So I mean, since I was a kid, I guess I don't have any mentors in like maybe the field of where I am, right? But my auntie owned a hairdressing shop. I literally lived in the basement where she had the shop, right? My uncle built computers for hobby and for work. My other uncle, I lived there with him for like 10 years. He just always was building things. Like, he always showed me how to like put things together. I always had this thing growing. My mother loved to sing. She always tells me this story about how they used to live in buildings in the region, and she brought a piano home, and she was like some like 13 years old. She brought a piano home. I was always like encouraged to create things, and like from all my cousins and stuff, they either are, if they're not actively pursuing something and creatively, they have a deep interest in it. So it was a part of kind of like at least my mother's side, and like I grew up primarily with my mom and like her side of the family here. So my mentor's all there. I still live with my uncle, and I can go upstairs and he'll help me with the project if it involves a computer or sound. You can help me with it. So
family is essential.
Yeah, exactly.
How about you, Destiny?
In the market for a mentor, But both my parents are very creative people, but neither of them actually pursued the arts. So it was something I was always around. My dad's a musician, but he's also like a pretty good draftsman. And my mom makes pottery, and yeah, I think it was always like something I did, but not something I pursued in school. Nowadays, yeah, my parents are really supportive of making art, but yeah, I think just seeing them and knowing that they were creative.
Tell me about the formation of the Black Artists Union. Who here was part of the founding of it, or who's joined? But yeah, somebody just pick up the narrative on this particular group and how it works.
What was that like? It's over a full year.
It's over a full year.
So there's, I believe, 7 of us. Is me, Aaron, Timothy. There's Nathan.
Yeah.
Philip, Erica, James, Kersha Wright, and Filma. And I think. Yeah, like it was just founding member, but no longer within the group. He's kind of been just drifted, did his own. Nathan, Nathan was the one that first kind of sat us down and kind of just threw the idea. Like it was really a novel idea initially, right? Like it was just kind of like, hey, we work in this, we all know each other and we work around each other and like sometimes even with each other, but infrequently and not in an organized kind of fashion. So he's like, how about we just do a thing with us and we'll see how it goes. It was really just like that. Yeah. And
you had a show, it was in Kensington.
Kensington.
187.
That was kind of like the beginning of it. And since then, we just kind of developed the group, added people that we all felt that it was really organic. It wasn't really
How did the name come about, though? Like Black Artists Union.
We kept it as simple as the idea of us getting together was. It was just like.
I mean, was it you?
Came up with a bunch of names, right, or something?
No, this was before I was even like.
And more people have joined, right? Like it has a kind of.
We're at 11 members. Yeah, I guess the whole idea was just to get. Similar to what you and Liz are kind of doing with this, is like to build connections with artists. So it's initially was just like, oh, I know somebody, you know somebody, you know somebody, and then boom, there's 7. And then same thing, we would do these meetings where we'd bring a lot of different artists in, and it kind of, we kept doing meetings, and then whoever kind of like stuck.
Stay consistent.
Just stuck. And then kind of organize things around the group. So our most recent exhibit is at Ignite Gallery.
Yeah.
What, one of like five exhibits.
We've done more than just art exhibits, though.
Yeah, we've done talks,
film screening,
and there's other things in the works too.
So. And collaboration with other Black artists and groups as well.
And I've noticed within the number, I've seen a number of the shows that people often also work collaboratively. There's that sort of come up, right?
Like mm-hmm.
Not everybody's just
more
working
and
on
more
their
now,
own.
Yeah.
So. Talk about the impulse to come together as Black artists into a group. And
when I was told about the idea of doing it, it was simply because like, oh, it's not happening. Are you gonna wait for it to happen or should it just happen right now? And I thought that was more than enough. And other than that, I think it just helps artists because for me, and I assume like my peers, like who's gonna be, there's not many people around like it's gonna be talking the same ideas you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And as well as like people that are coming from the like, same experiences that you're coming from, so it just it helps like all of us like make our work as well as mm-hmm. like continue creating our work.
Right.
Yeah, and just even like the conversations that we have and like the idea development and those kind of things. As much as it's a group of artists, there's a lot of like, you know, it's very obvious. There's a lot of social things that we try to work out. Within the group, like whether it be certain concepts, theories, or issues in our communities, and things that like it's really, you know, it's difficult to talk about in settings where it's like you're not amongst like minds.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, and there's certain ways to talk about things that you can't talk about in certain kind of spaces. So it's like the necessity of us having a space where we can kind of either even let out certain frustrations, yeah. You know, without having to worry about like whatever might come with that, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's actually still like a challenge, just finding like a proper space for us to kind of
Even just space.
Yeah.
To be in.
Which is kind of interesting to me because there's Toronto seems very like the art community, what I'm gathering of it, is that this whole push for accessibility, but accessibility is so hard to find. And I think that's something that I found very into like why I wanted to be a part of the collective. Was just like access, and on top of it too, like the medium that I work in has just mainly been fashion, and I felt like even though that is an art in itself, I feel like it's also important to be surrounded with different artists that work in different mediums and forms, because then it, I guess it helps elevate your practice in a sense.
People will talk about Toronto and a long rich history of art galleries and art museums and artist spaces, and growing up, was there a sense of places like that to go, or that you did go? Or,
no. Yeah. Not for me, at least.
Yeah.
Not really. Like, for me, a lot of my interest was, like, street art and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, like, I'd work at home, and then me and Philip, one of the other members, we just find a wall somewhere and paint. Mm-hmm. We're outside a lot. That's actually the paint outside. Yeah, that was a difficult thing. And it initially wasn't something I thought about too much. It was more after the fact. It's like, oh yeah, like, you know, there's not really like this
like sense this, of directory, like,
or like
where
a
you
space.
Could go.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
Like, this is
like
space.
There's nowhere that advertises like if you're an artist of color, you can come here and
yeah,
you can
yeah.
just work. Like
yeah.
there's not that.
Yeah. Even just to talk practically like rent and things like that. The idea of like renting a space to use that space for say what we do, or even just an individual artist, like every artist in the city probably deals with this situation, but especially black artists. Spaces for this kind of thing, like it's definitely tough. It gets tougher every few
year.
Months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think about working elsewhere?
All the time.
Yeah.
Like in a different country.
Yeah, or other city. I mean, lots of people, I live in Hamilton, lots of people move to Hamilton, or they move to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, how much do you feel your work right now is very much related to this place?
I don't know if North America would be necessarily this, like, this space, period. Like,
right. Do you mind talking more about why that is?
Because of its history with black people and black art. Just, like, not even black art, just black resources. I don't know. I feel like if you're in a country where majority of people look like you, and your history is that you came here on false pretenses, it's just kind of like where in the system would they fall in a place to give to you?
Right.
I don't know if that is coming anytime soon.
I think the fact that majority of us are around this area, or it's accessible in ways that we can all come together like once a week, at least, just to spend time and to have conversations about what's affecting us. I think that's what makes Toronto like pretty essential to us.
Right.
Is just coming together and like friendship also.
I agree with you in a lot of ways. There's always like two feelings I have about that. It's like, you know, again with my grandmother coming here and like being from Jamaica and this being a British colony and Jamaica being a part, it's like you have two feelings. You almost feel like, well, we have such a long history here. Like, why should I have to leave?
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah,
like, and especially the circumstances. Like, you know, you feel like entitled's not really the right word. I can't really think about it. But it's like you should have.
You feel entitled
space.
To the space.
Yeah,
and then it's,
you know,
like, will you get it?
And then on the other end, because of that feeling, you're like, maybe I shouldn't even be here in the first place. In terms of like really locally, like we, as artists, like where I should work. Sometimes I'm like, I live in Scarborough. I always live there. So I should just work out there. It's cheaper. but then there's even that. Like there's certain things that, you know, the way the city is designed and how socially and economically it's designed. It's like, how much can, you know, it's like, for example, you have a Gallery Y Plus in Scarborough.
Yeah, yeah.
A great group of people. I actually went to school with a lot of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, what they're doing over there is awesome. But then it's like, they're so far removed that it's like, you know, it's like the idea for a lot of people who work and live out here to go
all the
to an
way
exhibit
to the
there.
End,
it's like a whole thing for them, you know? So same thing.
It was interesting talking to Alyssa Farron about, you know, she's curating the Scarborough section of Nuit Blanche. Yeah, and then we went into this conversation about, you know, that environment of Scarborough and the resources and the spaces that are there. But she said one of the biggest barriers is transportation.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And then not even in terms of just like art, but in terms of even the aspect of talking about certain concepts and ideologies mm-hmm. around the Black community mm-hmm. is hard too as well, because then that space is also needed. I also just to even add on to what you're saying about like Scarborough, and then even like because I lived in the East and I moved to the West, mm-hmm. I even saw that there's not even a much difference, except it's just kind of interesting how like urban planning is where a lot of people of color live north or like
yeah.
east or far west.
Yeah.
And just the community sense around that is just very empty and bland
because
okay. everyone's coming to the central city to do everything. And it's like there's no spaces out there, but then there's no spaces
right.
central as well.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know where the bridge would be in terms of like a solution.
We were talking about studying art and going to school. Shalika Englund, who I mentioned, who goes to Etobicoke School of the Arts, she had talked about going to an art school but being the only Black student there, which obviously from just generally thinking about somebody going to high school in Toronto, that seems kind of a startling thing to sort of state. Has that been an experience for any of you guys about being like being interested in the arts but feeling like...
Yeah.
I think as a Black person, like being interested in school, that's just an experience.
Right, not just art.
It's funny to see, like, my grandma comes here with her kids to have a better life for everybody. And then in retrospect, I was given so much from my mom
yeah.
and I've experienced so many different creative spaces, but the community within that, I was always outside of it and I was never really a part of it. So what that does and what it reflected in my schooling through elementary, I went to college for a year and a bit, and I'm in school currently right now as well, like in university. But high school, I'd see, like the suburbs are segregated, that's what I'm getting at. And so in high school, I'd see other Black kids and people around in the town, but the second I'm in any space, like the school or the community center or just anything else that's like more regulated, then I was always the only, like I was, my whole elementary, I was the only Black male in all my classes. And that was always really like, I didn't know it felt off, but I couldn't really put my finger on anything that was off because I'm just a child experiencing it.
Yeah, 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 that's a good point.
I think you see Black people, but not in groups.
Yeah.
So like even just seeing representations of like Black artists in this city coming together, like working together
mm-hmm.
and like making things is like kind of rare. I don't see it often, and I was definitely like going to OCAD. Yeah, you see other Black students, but like in one class, it's probably like it's pretty sparse.
Yeah, I know Liz's experience, she's talked about as a graduate student,
mm-hmm.
right? Feeling a lot like growing up in Regina.
Right? I've talked to Liz
yeah,
about that.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, she finds that challenging. It
yeah,
can be.
Like, my entire undergraduate art history program, I was the only, for five years, I was
yeah.
the only Black student, Black male, especially. But the thing, like, I went to the Scarborough campus, so I had relationship with a lot of students who were in the African Student Association.
Yeah.
So there were black
students there.
And they, oh, totally. And there, but the fields were completely different. I was the only one that was in any arts program, period,
yeah.
let alone not studio. That was always something interesting. Like that was, at that point, I kind of knew. And so that's why after graduation, it always made me think about, how viable it is to pursue something in arts education or arts administration or something like that. Cause You never saw somebody like yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether they be a professor or a student.
Yeah, that was my next question, which
mm-hmm.
we've asked lots of people about. Like, it was really telling when talking to Shalika at the Etobicoke School of the Art, which has a great reputation as a school, but Liz asked her, like, how many teachers of color had she had, and there's, like, silence. And then she said, well, there kind of is the answer. And then, again, thinking about this young woman I met the other day at Western, who I mentioned was like the eighth, ninth generation, her experience at Western, and she's in anthropology and linguistics and cultural studies, couldn't name a professor of color, either that she'd had, or even, so she said, no, I haven't really had anybody. And I said, well, is there somebody waiting for you? Like, for, you know, they teach fourth year, they're only in the graduate program, and she couldn't think of anybody. So a lot of the artists we've talked to have also reflected on what Camille Turner would talk about as the sort of amnesia, the national amnesia about Black history in the country, or the Black presence. Somebody like Charmaine Nelson, because her work is all about the history of slavery in Canada. She's the only tenured Black professor in art history in Canada. She's at McGill. Her work is, a lot of it has been around, like, everybody talks about the Underground Railroad and Canada being this, like, sanctuary and everything, but there was slavery before that, and here's all the... So one of the questions we've asked lots of people is, like, growing up here, how aware were you of the deep history of Black history in Canada? Like, how far back it goes?
I like to start that off with just, like, how school education works, like, as a student, which is really interesting, because I've experienced it, and through high school, my mom has called out teachers I've had on it to keep me into programs, because a lot of the time you get written off, like, as a Black student, especially a Black male. And so, like, I've seen other people make a handful of mistakes and be just written off as, like, oh, like, they just, something happened, something came up, they couldn't do it, but then it happens to a Black male, and the next thing you know, it's like, oh, I guess they're just not capable. And so, in turn, that goes into, like, all of education, and so already you're gonna see less people in these fields. But on top of that, that same type of discrimination is getting, like, pushed on people that are trying to enter the workforce, where it's like, oh, I don't know if they're capable. Like, oh, can I trust them with this position? Is it too much for them, or something like that, etc. So I always was wary of that, and I'm always, in all spaces that I'm going, I'm thinking, like, so where are all the Black people? And then in my education, I've had one English teacher use English to cover the Indigenous history in Canada, and I'm really thankful for that, because that's not in the curriculum.
But they added it.
I see what you mean. They sort of taught it through.
Right.
Yeah.
So I learned a bunch of things that, like, my mom would read about post her education, because she grew up in Canada as well.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things that I meet people, and, like, grown adults, middle aged people, like, have no clue that lived their whole lives, like, of the history, but it's like a secret, and that's what I feel that's being done with it. It's not in, if it's not in the education system, like, it's a secret, because you're supposed to educate your people so your people can not make mistakes and live the best lives.
Learn from it.
Yeah.
And
the United States is an easy place to deflect our attention to
Canadian history.
So it's a lot. It's because we're such close neighbors. I mean, a lot of the conversation about Blackness in Canada is framed with this, within the American framework of racism and what that means.
Let's talk some more about that, because that, you guys just went right to one of Liz's dominant questions in these conversations that we've had about, and this is something she raised with Felicia Mings in Chicago, who grew up in Canada but then moved there to teach and work. Cozy Nebe, who's a young Nigerian artist who lives in Ottawa, like, it always came back to this conversation about the impact, the experience of being Black in Canada, but deeply influenced by people's perceptions via an American, African American model, because of media or whatever. Can anybody pick up? You started to talk about that.
Something for me is always interesting. Like, I'll have these conversations with my uncle a lot, and him coming from Jamaica, and he's very specific on when we talk about these kinds of things. Not to create, like, a division. We're all from the African diaspora, right? But to recognize the difference between African Americans, Canadian, and a lot of us being first generation. Like, I'm first generation Canadian from, and my parents from Jamaica. So it's many things that we experience here are things that we borrow from America. So whether it be even just like things like sports, I look at pop culture. I look at pop culture and I see how much we attach ourselves to things like that. So to me, it's almost like It's like we import a lot of the issues from the United States and bring them here. So it becomes something, I don't know, like it's become something easy for us to I don't think we do it intentionally, but I think because of lack of education.
Yeah.
And so we learn a lot of these things through media. And so through the media, we receive information. Black people even see images of ourselves from America mostly, right?
Yeah.
For example, like in America, they have, say, BET, they have black entertainment.
Yeah.
I grew up watching, like, you know, after school, watching music videos from you, but that's an American station here. You have no other choice but to watch that. It's like, we don't even have the equivalent here. So it's where else would you expect me to any of that kind of sensibility from?
Yeah.
Just to touch on the last question too with education, like moving here, from Jamaica, I was actually put into an ESL class because they thought Jamaicans didn't speak English or didn't have proper education, so that I wouldn't be able to catch up. So with that, with my mom living here and not understanding the whole system, because our educational system is completely different, it's the UK system. So when that happened, she didn't even know. So I was there for like a good semester, and until she realized that I had already learned the stuff, and that's the reason why I was so uninterested in even participating in assignments, because I already knew this information. But to my teacher, because I was uninterested, she thought that I was incapable of doing the work.
Right.
So I feel like as much as that may be unintentional to not like strive for progression through black students or even teach them about their history, I think there's a part of it that is intentional, because no matter what, education is a system and it works one and the same with the government. And then I found throughout history class too as well, like we learned a lot more. For example, like a semester is maybe like 14, 15 weeks. You would learn maybe like 8 out of those weeks about American history, and then maybe 2 or 1 week about Canadian history. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a small part of that, which is about black history, but then a large amount of it was a whole bunch of other stuff. And I kind of feel like, I feel like there is a reason as to why they teach students a certain way. And I feel like a lot of it is intentional. It is intentional to deflect, because then it once again makes Canada look like that whole savory, like, oh, like we aren't completely clean, but look at what the Americans have done to Indigenous people.
Yeah.
And then you deflect from seeing what Canada did with the reform schools and everything like that. And then like, oh, you know, black people from America used Canada as, you know, the Underground Railroad, but then they deflect from saying, like, how were those black people treated when they did come here? What was their minimum wage, and what jobs were they getting, and how were they treated? It's just, like, I feel like that deflect is also on purpose. Like, it's it's intentional.
That story of the Underground Railroad is, like, Canadians love that story.
Just because it makes it makes Canada look good once again.
And again, it doesn't, we've talked with a bunch of people about this, it's like people don't actually look at what happens prior to that, which is that there is slavery here. There's slaves in Toronto, and there are streets here, as Camille Turner's work looks at. Like, there are streets here named after slave owners. Peter Street downtown is named for a slave owner. Dundas, where I live in Hamilton, sort of edge of Hamilton, Dundas. Richard Hatt was the founder of, he owned slaves, right? All United Empire Loyalists, who the great, you know, these heroes of Canadian narrative who came to Canada after the American Revolution brought their slaves with them because slavery was legal. So that part, it doesn't get told. But then, like you were saying, then the after the Underground Railroad, why did so many people leave, right? Why were people still willing to go back to the United States after the Civil War, knowing that there was still extreme racism, but would leave here? Yeah. So one of the things that Liz often brings up, because you've mentioned about relationships to Jamaica, right? And you're first generation, your parents came.
First generation.
My dad.
Liz often talks to people about homegoing, and this comes out of her interest in her relationship to Nigeria. And so the very first interview we did with Cozy Nabe, who was born in Nigeria and grew up in Ottawa, they talked a lot about that relationship and how important being Nigerian was to how important going back was. How important is Jamaica as a place to you? Do you see it as a place that is still a place that you feel a need to go to, mm-hmm. to be present in? And
mm-hmm.
yeah,
I have family in Jamaica. I haven't been back since I was like probably 3 or 4, but I feel like if I'm there, I'm also kind of an outsider. Here, that feeling exists in ways also. I definitely, like, I'm a North American person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was born there, so when I came up here every summer, every, like, long vacation, mm-hmm. going back was very essential to my mom, at least.
Yeah, okay.
But it's very dangerous. The violence is really ridiculous.
Okay.
Not to say that it isn't a beautiful country and that that culture hasn't inspired so many other subcultures all over the world. It's just the violence is a very strong issue. So it's been hard to go back and feel... Anytime I went back, I wasn't a part of society. I was very sheltered. I was very enclosed. So experiencing the culture... Like whenever I go back now, I feel very out of place because I've grown up here majority of my life, and then two, the culture is just so different. You're exposed to way much more.
I go regularly, gaps here and there and stuff. My dad actually, he's the one that, like, he goes back every year, maybe more than once a year and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, I mean, I'm going in June. It's one of those things where. I never really had that feeling necessarily. Like, there, I have family that's telling me that I should come down all the time, and like
that's
I
should
live there. And I go there, and they want to keep me there. And, you know, maybe when I'm a lot older.
Yeah.
And then my mother just recently got her Canadian citizenship, so for a long time she couldn't even go come back. Right. So within on my mom's side, like, everyone either they go or they want to go back, and it's this ideation of like going back and never. Coming back to Canada and stuff, but there's something that keeps everybody here. A lot of Jamaicans say that when they leave, and they want to leave from North America and go back, but it's because of poverty and a lot of
the
things.
Violence,
it's like,
you know, it's really what keeps people here.
Yeah,
or in other places.
I find it a lot of this poverty. There's violence, but sometimes I don't know. Like, it's one of those things. It's like. The world's violent too,
and right? And of course, yeah.
Yeah, and like, there's certain areas that like violence is like crazy, like Montego Bay. There's a lot of crazy stuff.
But now it's kind of interesting to me how this whole propaganda of like a better life or a better opportunity in North America, and it's not to say that there isn't opportunity. It's just kind of like, why is it like put on this pedestal of. It's much better than living anywhere else in the world, which it may not be the case, because Jamaica's a beautiful place. A lot of places are really great to live. Yeah. It's just...
There's poverty, you know? It's like, you know, it's like the idea of certain things that you would have here. But the reality is, when you get here, the poverty's just a bit different. I know, I do think it's something very important. And for me, it's like, I hope to be able to go and provide something.
So, you're all artists. That's where we started. What do you see happening here in Toronto that fills you with a sense of hope or positive? There's change happening, there's opportunities opening up. One of the artists, I won't say, like, talked about, like, it felt like there was a kind of a renaissance going on for Black artists in Toronto, or that there was a tension that should have been there but is now coming. Do you feel like that?
I don't really feel like that. I think it's like, internet exists, and then you get to see more people, and then it just happens that you're seeing more people, so like, maybe to some it appears that there's so much more going on, but what I think for like so many Black people and artists that I meet now is that most of us are like new immigrants or first generation immigrants, and I think there's a thing that happens that's like you come to North America for a better life in relation to the world, and there are so many, there's a list of things that are so great about Toronto, but at the same time it's not perfect. But I think what's great about what Toronto can do, you can create your own agency, and that's what like my mom and my dad have done. And then it's hard because things are like super expensive, but I believe there's some way to like create my own agency and like have my own autonomy in the world, and like maybe with that, the work I could do here, I can do something Jamaica and go back. And because I think we're all put in a position where there's no one space to like everything's gonna be perfect, and there's no one job where everything's gonna be perfect. We're allowed to engage in the world in like a multitude of ways. So I think Toronto's a good like center. Like I'll probably have a studio in Toronto my whole life. I don't know if I'll live here, but having a studio, like,
having a place here,
yeah, it's a good like marker to have agency within the world, I think.
Yeah.
The artists that are in BAO and just friends and people who are around that are really inspiring and like are doing things and making changes. I think that's what like being here is. Yeah, it's like something's
blue. I always just think about, you know, where my what my grandmother and my mother and them were doing when they first came, and like what now, like the opportunity that I have, you know, from coming from somebody who had to come and clean homes for like white people here.
Yeah.
It's like, and me being able to even just have the freedom to create art, it's not easy, and you still have to work against a lot of those things. But yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on. Even this space Q, they help a lot of, like, for me, that really set me off in terms of like my confidence in creating art and like the viability of it, and then them having their own space is good for a lot of, they help a lot of artists of color and marginalized artists here. So there's that, and like there's a temperature right now.
Yeah.
You can kind of feel like, you know, because of the internet, yeah, for sure. It's, you're seeing everything. But there's like even the idea of the BAU coming together. Like that, like to me, is like that.
Right.
There's this type of impetus. There's something going on that like made us even form that. And then some pockets of things going on.
I don't know if the temperature is like, or like this new wave is a form of guilt or affirmation, but I definitely feel like it's a good thing now to be black and an artist in Toronto. Like there's a lot of people who are looking to fill spaces with black art, but in terms of the intention or where it may be going in terms of black art in Toronto, I'm not necessarily sure, but I guess it's a good thing that whether it's guilt or affirmation, that you still at least, I guess, have a chance to have a voice and use different types of platforms.
And then it sustains, that it's more...
And then there's like a documentation of at least.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the show of The ROM? What's your sense of that show?
Considering the history of The ROM and this being their follow-up, I don't know, it's still working. You know, you're kind of conflicted in a lot of different ways.
I like what you said, how to be present, not a barrier, because you could say that the show was good, X, Y, and Z, but the show at the ROM and having the show at the ROM is a barrier within itself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because ROM's not a space
with
like a diverse group of people like entering it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that alone, like what if ROM funded like another space to like,
dude,
that would have full control over it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing, I guess that's what I was pushing, is this idea that, you know, like everybody's always talking about that the future for galleries and museums, like, yes, people want change, but they don't actually want to take what has been dominating off the table.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always about adding more.
They
like, we should build
a space.
Yeah, instead of going like, well, I mean, I'm very critical of the AGO, and but it's like, what if you stopped? Like, do we really need all those galleries dedicated to old European art? Right? So, you know, and it's like, I know the research internally about, like, just generally why people go to the AGO, and, like, that's not why they go.
No.
Even their existing audience, right? So you go, like, this commitment to maintaining what is there, and then adding on, as opposed to going, well, what about if you just... Reagan, who I met the other day, she said, you know, there's a point where it's great to see like this artist gets a show and then that, or there's a show, but that's really, really slow. That's what she was saying. It's a very slow process to change. And why all this patience and energy to change a corrupt system?
No.
Right? Sure. And I thought that was a really kind of profound way of putting it, which
for
is
sure,
like,
it's
we're
like,
putting
do
all
they
of this energy.
Want to
Is
it like, is that the reason? Is there an actual will or want to change?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
there's like, I always think about this time period in the, like the 90s, I feel like where identity politics was like such a hot, it felt like now, but
yeah,
the consciousness
and sometimes I kind of worry that this could be just yep. another Loop. 90s where right. this becomes a thing, but there, and I'm a big believer in like ownership, so it's like people like ourselves don't own many of these spaces
yeah.
or
yeah.
Have any control over it. So in the case of that, yeah, sure, Ram might do a show, AGO will do a show, mm-hmm. he'll do all these shows, and then the next decade, we're going to forget about it.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about the 90s. I went to school in the 80s, and when I do my graduate course that Liz is part of, we always use this book by the D'Art Foundation that came out in the early 90s that was based on a conference that was in the 80s at the DIA in New York. And I went to the conference, I was a student. And the reason we read it is because it's based on a series of conversations and debates among artists about what the issues of the day were facing artists and museums. And it was a lot about diversity. So there's like a panel with Fred Wilson, and Bell Hooks speaks there, mm-hmm. and Edgar Hieberbirds comes and talks about indigenous issues, right? We read it because when you read through it, it could be a thing happening at the power plant yesterday. And so it's also to pause and say, okay, so that was the conversation when I started. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, it's very depressing to be sitting here in 2018.
And having the same exact
conversation. And it's like, I really thought when I came in, I often say this, I went to art school not because I wanted to paint, or, I mean, I did want to paint, but I really went to art school because I thought that was the place where progressive, interesting ideas were
made.
And critique and dialogue. Right. And so, and that excited me in the 80s to be right immersed in those kind of conversations. And then to sort of feel like you go through a career, because I didn't work my whole career at the AGO. I've worked all over the place and come in and out of institutions. And then to be sitting here today, it's kind of like, wow, we're still
talking about it.
Hello again. So we're back with some members of the Black Artists Union, and we're here at Ignite Gallery in Kensington, and we're in the show You Done Taken My Blues and Gone, which comes from a poem by Langston Hughes. We thought we would pick up from the interview we started a few days ago with a couple of members of the group and looking at some specific works in the show and talk about these works and also process. So we're going to start with two artists who have collaborated.
Destiny Grimm.
Aaron Jones.
So we're in the space. You maybe can describe whether we're looking at four or five separate works, or you see these as individual works, but you did them collaboratively. They involve painting directly on the walls. They involve paintings plus digital imagery that's like almost like wallpapered onto the wall. So maybe talk about how you guys have worked together, and then also what you know, how that came about, and describe what we're seeing in these pieces. So maybe we'll start with Destiny.
For the installation itself, we started by graffitiing the wall and then doing a removal of the graffiti with paint rollers.
So there's graffiti under the surface?
Yeah, that's correct.
Was that documented in any way, or that was just part of your decision?
Yeah. The graffiti itself was not documented at all. The idea of the removal was something that I had in my head for a long time. I wasn't sure how it would work out.
Right.
And so this was kind of a chance to test it out. We tested the removal in my studio without graffitiing the wall, and the shapes that we made didn't evoke that of graffiti removal that we were aiming for. So. Yeah, we made the decision to actually like spray paint the wall this time in space, and then Aaron's collage came next, and then the paintings. So it reminds me of something that you would walk by on the street, that you would come about by
yep.
chance, and that you might happen upon.
The actual painting, so when you say that, you mean these are like painted objects, like you think of a painting, and these are hung over the painted out graffiti plus the collage photo elements, right? So these are by you? You make the paintings?
Paintings are, yes, they're made by me. They're oil paintings. They're made in the studio. Some of them are actually, like this one's actually nailed to the wall. All oil paint on wood.
So can you talk about the photography? Like you're working with some... Is it mostly found imagery that you work with?
Yes, all my collages that are here pasted on the wall, they start at very small scale. And so they're intimate objects, like objects playing with image relating to like representation, like ways to see self. So I like play with that, and it all comes from like books that you find in domestic space. So like educational books for children, or like fashion magazines that would come from my mom. Even like there's design books I'd have as a kid going from schooling, or like something on like space. So all these things that are supposed to be molding your perception of reality. So I'm using that information and like challenging that information.
These are blown up, right? So you photograph.
So I scan all of these.
Make like, the collage and then blow the collage up.
Right? Yeah, I make the collage, I scan it, high resolution, and then I reprint it on smaller pieces of paper, and then like a puzzle, remake that puzzle. And I did a wheat paste to the wall just because we were trying to play off of that push and pull between like construction spaces, like an alleyway space where you'd see blank wall for maybe a block. And then next thing you know, a week or two goes by, and then there's graffiti up, mm-hmm. then the institution pushes back, like whatever construction corporation or like whoever owns the building, they push back, and so all the graffiti is removed. It's a weird like half trying thing I've been removed, because whenever it looks gone, it becomes like a new like cultural skin on like all their buildings. So it's instead of, not all of them, but instead of just having like solid color here or there, it becomes just like these patterns. Just like to play with that, and then those spaces become like creative spaces. And I think it's kind of important to understand like outdoor creative spaces that people wouldn't, or that wouldn't be in the gallery. And then that in relation to us like being Black artists, it's scarce to see us in the institution to begin with. So we brought in objects in a way of displaying work that wouldn't be like in this type of space.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you guys start working together? What inspired you to, like, was that thought about in advance of the show, or was that about coming in here to the space, or how did you guys start?
Maybe through talking about our work and coming to realize some alignments, and then this show gave us the opportunity to test some ideas that we had discussed.
The collaboration idea is new. It's kind of like intuitive for our installation. Yeah. Like we had our materials, we had our idea, and so we had all these things conceived, but visually there was no representation of this installation. There's no like smaller maquette. We had a week to install, so the whole week we were here and just seeing what we can work with and seeing like how we work together. So like that process was our like first time working together.
It's really successful.
Yeah, I think we were going for something that is like difficult to work with for the gallery to work with. Because at the end of the month, we're not supposed to be in this space and all the stuff's supposed to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
But in a sense, we made it not an impossible de-install, but it's a lot more difficult than the traditional way of like hanging a show where everything is very streamlined. You don't nail your work or adhere your work to the wall because it needs to be taken off and moved around. So I like the idea of how things are just not concrete in the space, but it's adhered. It becomes like, it has its own permanence in the space.
Yeah.
And I like the struggle that the institution needs to take in like removing the work from the space, because in a sense it's like removing us from the space.
There's a sense of lack of permanence potentially there. What does it mean for you as artists to think that these have a temporary existence as paintings, right? Because obviously as a painter and the way you work with photographic images, it's very tactile. So obviously this could be photo documented and reproduced as big blow up photo, but does that bother you that they won't exist beyond the end of the show?
The collages, sure, yeah. I hope to keep one of them that Aaron said that he'll just like throw them away after he peels them off the wall. Thinking on permanence, I think something I think of where does the painting start and where does it end? From the production of the materials to where will it the work end up? After the show, but after it leaves my studio, or after like I eventually die, maybe the painting will outlive me. But what will happen to the work, and how will the life of the work evolve? And the space has all of those same ideas tied in.
I wonder if we can bring Timothy into the conversation. Your work's in the back room. Mm-hmm. Basically, you have two pieces back there.
I consider the entire
room to be a piece.
Yeah.
Can you describe the elements?
So when you go in, you have the floating screen. It's a piece of acrylic sheet, mylar, hung in the middle of the space with a projector behind it, performing like this reverse projection. And then when you walk into the door in the corner, you have this sculpture, this child figure watching a television on a pillar, kind of like a, I don't know if you could say like it's like a Greco-Roman kind of black pillar.
Like it's not a new monitor, it's an older one.
It's an old monitor with like a VHS player installed in it, so it's playing a tape of Bad Boys. It's actually my first display of a video piece. I've made them before on the computer, but I've never showed them. So most people might know my work as a painter or like muralist or...
And what's the image on the projected part is a man.
Yeah.
So he's kind of static, but then there's animated, a kind of animated projection within his body. And who is the man and what's the projection?
Yeah, so the figure in it is Kevin Gates. So Kevin Gates is a rapper from New Orleans. He was on probation for like an assault, but then he got pulled over and had a gun. I believe maybe in a state where they can't conceal guns like that, or there's an illegal firearm. But yeah, they had him, he was in jail for a while. He was releasing music in jail. It's kind of like a trope with a lot of rappers, maybe since the 90s onwards, where it's like, you know, there's this cycle of them making it to a certain point, but still getting pulled into the system, institutional system. And then, but then it adds like this kind of, I don't know if you want to say mystique, behind their whole performance. So there's this whole movement for a while, like Free Kevin Gates is probably one of other times he's had this happen to him. And so he was released just recently. And I just thought, I really like that image. Like there's a lot going on in the image. Mm-hmm. So he's sitting down, he has, I believe, you can call it like, it's like a kufi he's wearing. In the original image, his wife is sitting next to him. Yeah, so the lapel, like this area, there's like a,
around his chest.
Yeah, around the chest. There's that's the video part I put together. So it's a video collage. That's the best way I could describe it. Is of imagery. A lot of it's like news imagery and violent imagery put into parts. And then you have Wall Street footage. There's stock footage, like 70s stock footage from Wall Street up in the top corner.
Do you see a relationship between how you approach painting and how you approach working with this media and technology?
Yeah, totally. Well, when I was developing my paintings, 2016, I did like an installation with all my work. So all my work is orange. This is my color that I tend to use. So I did this orange room thing, and what I realized building—that took me 4 years to put together. I was doing all this creating this body of work really just so I could do an installation. So I feel this is the same thing where it's my awareness of space. Like I just enjoy using space as a medium. So sometimes it doesn't matter, like I was thinking about it, it's like the painting or video, it didn't really matter what the medium is, just as long as I can use a room in an interesting way. I'm really into works that like go beyond just like nailing the thing into the wall, right? So that room was a good chance for me to do something. That's why it was so important I built this screen that floated, so I could just have it be an interesting experience more than just like watching a video on the screen.
This quote pulled from a poem by Langston Hughes. I wonder if one of you were...
Yeah, I could speak on that.
Yeah, why don't you talk about
that? So there's a video piece in this show, and it's done by Echo Stone. In the video piece, there's a lot of research that he was doing, because he wrote an essay, and the essay was originally supposed to be just an audio piece. And then time goes on and things evolve. But so within his research, he was reading that Langston Hughes poem, and then we were at one of our meetings, we were discussing like research and where we're going and where we're coming from. And at that time, we didn't have a title for the show. Reading it, one of us, we pointed it out, is like, that's a good title. And then it kind of just stuck. And I don't think anyone had anything against it. And we just thought it worked. And instead of having like a statement, we thought the first half of the poem by Langston Hughes was the best part to use.
I think I said the other day when we met, like I'm impressed with like how you guys work as a collective. It seems very collaborative, very non-hierarchical, right? Is that true?
It's true.
Yeah, it seems that way, right?
Like it is very difficult to work like that, but at the same time it like gives everyone space and a chance to have their voice heard, and I think that's very important at the same time,
Yeah, I was talking Last week I was interviewing Peter Ernuk, who's an Inuit elder, and he was in Guelph, and he was talking about how territorial government in Nunavut works, that it's actually a consensus, unlike every other province or territory, where it's, you know, the hierarchical, you know, British system of parliament. They actually work from a consensus model, which is, you know, seems to be very productive, and it's hard work. It seems much more suitable to the culture and the place, and there's a lot to be learned from that approach. One of the things that some of the folks we've interviewed in this series have talked about is the overly competitive aspects of the art world. It is very much, seems to be about that, like people competing all the time. And do you think about Black Artists Unions come together and how you try to work together as a group as intentionally countering that, or does it just happen to be the way that you've chosen to work?
Yeah, like it came about pretty naturally, but yeah. You know, I think we kind of recognized everybody has their own strengths, and so instead of working in like a top-down model, if we work like this, we can, you know, we can kind of use each other's strengths for different things in order to get things done, because, you know, we're all young artists by the end of the day, so no matter how, you know, one person might be very talented, but you might lack in a certain aspect on another end. So I find, you know, like Aaron said, it can be, some things can be a little more difficult to pull off than others, but even a show like this, we kind of make a consensus. We sit in a room and we say, so-and-so is asking us if we want to do this project, how many people want to participate, how many don't, do we participate, period. There's a lot of things that we might have even turned down because it didn't match up with the values of maybe most of the members, or even if we're just busy, like we're just too busy to do something. So it's nice that we can kind of do it like that, so we don't misrepresent each other and ourselves.
Thanks so much for meeting up again. Looking forward to seeing more work and working together soon.